The Cork Food Stories Podcast with Clara Cooney, Cork's Red FM.
Welcome to this week's Cork Food Stories Podcast, where we talk to food suppliers and producers of Cork and have them share their wonderful stories with us. In general, here in Cork, there's a huge passion for all things food, whether it is shopping at our local markets, eating out in amazing restaurants, cooking at home with families and friends, and getting your favourite foods delivered to your door. I'm Clara Cooney, owner of Clara Cooks, where I turned my own passion for food into a business, teaching people in their own homes everything from shopping local and cooking fabulous meals. I also do private events while using Cork's amazing produce. My guest this week is a well-known businessman, Dennis Good from Good Fish. Dennis was born and raised in Carrabinny near Crosshaven in County Cork. Sharing his father's love for boats at the very young age of 15, he took his father's ferry boat across the harbour to Crosshaven to begin his career as a shipwright boat builder. With a growing love for the fishing industry, Dennis opened his first fish shop, Good's Fish, in 1988. Since there, Dennis has grown a very successful business with 5 retail stores in Cork, 2 processing plants in Carrigaline, a successful trade to hospitality and supermarkets, both nationally and internationally. Dennis, welcome to this week's podcast, Cork Food Stories. Very happy to have you here today to share a story with us. How are you?
Very well indeed, and thank you for having me, Clara.
Not at all, not at all. Now, Dennis, you know from listening to my podcast, I always like to go back to the beginning, and you've such a wonderful story from firstly getting your passion from your dad, Mossy, who owned the ferry rights across the Oneabree River for rowing passengers. You must have some great stories from those days, Dennis.
Yes, I was born in 1952, so the ferry from Carrabinny to Crosshaven was still going quite successfully. Obviously, in the 40s, it was busier because the scarcity of petrol for cars and things like that, there wasn't as many cars. So a lot of Cork business people living in Carrabinny used to take the ferry over to Crosshaven and get into the city through Crosshaven. I can remember boatloads of people, especially in the summertime, and they come from all over, really, from Ringaskiddy, Shambly, even Monkstone Passage, and they'd cross over with my dad in the ferry boats to go to Piper's Merry's, which was a big thing.
Yeah, in Crosshaven, yeah.
And that was a big, big thing in the summertime that they, for maybe the only time that they'd ever be in a boat, a little rowing boat and all as it was. And that went on, the ferry went on, obviously, as cars got on the road and everything started progressing on, the ferry business became unviable and he had to close it down in the early 60s, actually before I started my apprenticeship. But I still used one of his boats to go across to the boatyard in Crosshaven.
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
So the ferry finished in the early 60s, and unfortunately my dad then he went working at different things around the harbour. He worked in the construction of the deep water berth in Cove and up in as a boatman and up in Tivoli. He worked there. I used to row across from cycle into Black Rock, I believe, and then row across the river to Tivoli and get the gear going over there with the contractors.
Amazing. You two go on the boats with him yourself, Dennis, as well?
Yeah, from a very young age, obviously. I used to be on the rowing boats with Dad. I learned how to row a boat probably when I was big enough to handle an oar. It's just something we had. You know, we weren't very well off. Obviously, it was all rowing. Outboard engines at the time were a very, very rare thing. You know, the boats were smaller and whatever, but that's how we got on, and that's how people went to Mass. And all that, of people in Carrabinny used to go to church and to Mass in Crosshaven. They do their shopping in Crosshaven. And my dad used to bring butchers and different supply people over to Carrabinny and his ferry, especially in the 40s and the 50s.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. God, things have changed a lot now, of course. There's none of that. And I suppose we have the car ferries that are available just going across, even just from Monks down there to Cove and everything. Yeah.
And that's obviously, you know, that's a route saving, and you're not going through the tunnel in the city, whereas, I mean, the ferry business from Corbini to Cross Haven, there's nothing there for, you know, everyone has a car now or two cars, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that business is gone. We were still paying the ferry rights to the Cork Harbour commissioners, actually, were the people who wanted control of it, because they were in overall charge when the ferry licenses were issued. And I think it was my uncle and my dad, they took the license over in 1932. And there was people before them, the Buttonworth family, so the license is there since the 1800s.
Wow.
It's now, obviously, you know, that's not going to happen ever again. So that's the end of it.
That's the end of that. I know that's nearly a license that you put in a frame now for yourself, Dennis, as a memorabilia nearly.
Yeah, that's all. That's all it is, yeah.
And then I suppose from there, you started your apprenticeship as a boat builder in Crosshaven, because you must have some great stories as well from your days boat building around the coast.
Yes, yeah. I mean, Crosshaven Boatyard at the time was building some of the finest vessels. It certainly, when I served my time, had wonderful tradesmen. They were brilliant tradesmen, and they built the best of boats, top quality boats. You had obviously Mr. Leonard, God rest him, and awfully most of them are all deceased now. They were all great, great, great shipwrights. Them came from West Cork. They built the best of fishing trawlers. They built the best of sailing boats, the Moondusters, which everyone knows about.
Yeah.
And they built the boat for Sir Francis Chichester, an Englishman, and he sailed it around the world for single-handed. And these guys were brilliant men to serve. We didn't realize it at the time, of course, as apprentices.
Yes.
We're very, very lucky, all of us that served our time. When I was in the boatyard, there was 18 apprentices, and there was a staff there of, I think, 50 or 60. So it was a good place. It's a hard work. It was, you know, in the 60s, things weren't as mechanized as they are now. But the skills and the craftsmanship that went into some of these boats that they built, and these boats are still around today, which is testimony to how well they were built.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where was the boatyard down in Crosshaven, Dennis? Is it where the McWilliams is now, is it?
No, along, you know, do you remember where the old Majorca Bowl room was?
Well, I don't, but that's actually where my mum and dad met, I believe it. But there you go,
That would be next door. The boatyard would be next door. As you go along the Point Road, you can see all these yachts pulled out and standing up. Our stand. It's along from where the Mary's from, where Piper's Mary's.
I do. The front there, absolutely.
Or Lynch's centre shop, along there, along that road. That's where the boatyard is, and I used to come across from the Corribini side over to it. And it was a big employer in Crosshaven, and a valued employer at the time. And, you know, it was hard work. You didn't get much there, but the people that looked after us there, Mr. Leonard, Pat Lake, Joe Driscoll, all these managers and all the tradesmen there, Michael Murphy and Crosshaven, the Clarks, the Lakes, they were gifted people. The Middletons, they were all very, very high quality people, you know.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I mean, that set you up yourself, just getting your trade there.
If any of us that served our time there, it gave us a great basis of understanding of all the different skills that you had to have as a shipwright and as a boat builder. And I left, obviously, not long after serving my apprenticeship. Thank you very much. And I went on and I moved over to Carrigaloe, where the Cross River Ferry goes now.
Yeah.
And there was a big trawler building company there owned by the Fitzpatrick family. And we started building quite big trawlers then, 60-footers, 65-footers and that.
Amazing.
I stayed there for a couple of years, and then I went away fishing for a while.
And of course, I suppose from building the trawlers to you know, just going out fishing, you probably have such a great appreciation for the fishing industry from just, you know, starting at the building side of it and then getting out into the water as well.
Yeah. It was something I always wanted to do and something I wanted to try. Fishing is a tough business. It was tougher then because the boats weren't as good. Nowadays, the fleet is more modern, so the facilities on the boats are much better. But yeah. It was a good learning experience, you know, through the 70s there. And times were tough enough, you know. It wasn't easy in the 70s, and certainly not in the 80s, you know.
Yeah.
I came ashore and I went back boat building in O'Driscoll's there in Carrigaline. It is there by St. Mary's Church of Ireland. There was a boat down there. And we started building smaller vessels there, inshore boats, we used to call them. They went all over Ireland. And I worked there for a number of years as well under the late Joe Driscoll.
Yeah.
And worked with some great tradesmen there as well, Anthony Ronan and Mick Murphy and all these guys, I can mention them. And we had good times there as well.
Of course, absolutely. Like, you had an amazing career yourself, just going around and I suppose getting the insights into the fishing industry as well. And obviously, like, you did that for quite some time. You worked in different places, but then your love of it all, so you obviously said, right, okay, that's it. I'm going to start my own business. And am I right in saying there when you decided that you took a leap of faith, was your first thing starting that farm? You started a mussel farm in Oysterhaven?
I was working as a shipwright in the naval dockyard then, and during the 80s, it was a secure job. But, you know, I wanted to try out something on my own, so I started a mussel farm, one of the first ones really, in Cork, out in Oysterhaven. There was a lot of objections to it. It probably, on hindsight, wasn't the most ideal location for a mussel farm. But anyway, I tried it. We would have lost a share of it with gales and storms, etc. But, you know, we gave it a go. It didn't succeed. And at least I was holding down a job in the naval dockyard. So from there, I decided to try a fish shop in Carrigaline, on the main street in Carrigaline, a place called Wiley's House. It's up at the top of the town by the Corner House Bar, straight across from the Corner House Bar there.
Yeah, so was that in 1988 then, Dennis, when you decided, right, okay, I'm going to open my first fish shop? And Carrigaline was a different place back then, wasn't it?
At that time, there was actually six butchers, counters in Carrigaline. And my next door neighbour was the Flynn's family.
Yeah.
They're noted butchers. And they were so kind to me when I started out. People would go in and they might be going in to buy a few chops or whatever. And sure, Frank, God rest him, would send them on. They look, go down and get a bit of fish off of him. He's only starting out. That kind of neighborly thing was in the village, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It was lovely. They were nice people. And then I tried a fish shop inside in Princess Street. Unfortunately, that was really when interest rates and everything were wrong and it failed. We had to close it within 8 or 9 months.
You have the Carrigaline one still open at that stage, Dennis?
I did. Yeah, I did. But the one in Princess Street, failed, straight across from Clancy's Bar,
I had it for a while.
That failed, unfortunately, and it hurt us financially, but we traded out of it. So I came back, and then as well as the fish shop in Carrigaline, I opened a small little processing facility in the old Carrigaline pottery.
Yeah.
And started out there supplying hotels and restaurants and the local factories, supplying the catering companies. There, Sodexo and Campbell's Catering and these people at the time.
Yeah.
you know, there was good business there, in that there was the Pfizer's and all these places were starting to come on stream. And
But you were there for a good few years, weren't you, Dennis, in the old factory?
Yeah, I was. I was there for about 3 years, but it was difficult. And there was a lot of little businesses trading there. And if we had a fish lorry or whatever trying to get in and out, it was causing difficulties for everybody.
Yeah.
So there was a fish factory came up for sale in Middleton.
Okay.
And I moved down there for a number of years. But at that stage, I had the plans in my head that I was going to build a proper from the ground up fish factory with the proper drains and effluent and water supply, which is important for fish processing if you want to get into it in any scale.
Yeah.
So Cork County Council sold me a site where I am now, here in the Kilbitlary estate, and we built a proper fish factory from the ground up.
What year was that, Dennis? Because I know you've expanded since you built it first. I think you've doubled in size there, but what year was it when you built that?
2001,
yeah. And you had a small little retail shop off of the processing plant as well. She used to go in there.
Yeah. We had a little place there at the side, and that grew, and we extended the factory and built offices to the rear. So where the offices, we turned into a fish shop, and it was very, very successful.
Yeah.
And that was really when the economy was picking up and the demand for expensive fish was huge there. And you know, the noughties, it did very well. But on the other side, our business into the supermarkets in Ireland started to grow. So as that business grew and as there was more machinery and staff coming in, we were worried about, you know, our customers coming along and forklifts and trucks and whatever moving. So we were lucky enough that there was another little unit in the same estate down the front.
Yeah, which is a great location. I mean, your people pass you the minute they come into the park. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, and there's good parking there. And and so we were lucky enough to be able to purchase that and develop the fish shop. And we also have our industrial kitchen next door to that, where the shop is there now. And that allowed us then to go into further expansion into the supermarkets, which is the main business that we have now, both in the domestic market and our export market, really, is to the supermarkets.
What supermarkets do you supply to, Dennis?
At the moment now, we supply Tesco and Aldi. In Ireland, but we have supplied the other supermarkets as well. We supplied Lidl and we supplied Dunstores. We would supply a couple of the supermarkets in France, especially with frozen. And since Dunne has taken over, he's expanding that side of the export. And we have actually had our smoked salmon as far south as Morocco.
Amazing.
And I know that they go to Dubai, that they have customers in Dubai. And this is my son now, Dunno, who's taken over. He's identifying those markets and developing.
And I suppose a lot of people mightn't know this, but you smoke your own salmon in your processing plant, as well as those gorgeous meals that you do as well, which I think is so popular now because people are just always looking for something that they can put into their freezer or take home and cook straight away as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, you know, okay, obviously with the COVID, people have more time in their hands. So the fish shops or own retail shops are busier and people are experimenting. But, you know, people that have time pressure, work pressure and time, you know, they're looking for convenience. For good quality. So we have decided to just ease into that market. No big scale yet. We'll see. We'll test it in our shops. But you're correct. They're quite successful. The convenience side of it, is starting to grow. But we do notice that people are cooking more at home now, and they're getting more adventurous with the fish that they're looking for.
I know, it's brilliant.
Yeah, you know, it is. And we obviously, the shops, it's all down to our customers, right? And our customers are very loyal, and we hope that we treat them well. You know, we try to give the best quality, and we would be competitively priced. You have to be treating the customers fairly, and I think they'll come back and reward you then as well.
Absolutely, they do. Sure. I mean, my whole family have been going to you guys for a long time. But I mean, I think the thing, Dennis, as well. So, I mean, if we look back, because you did venture into the Dublin market as well for a while, didn't you?
We did, yeah. In the 2011, that way, we thought that the rental costs in Dublin would be low. And we thought that that might be a good time to try shops in Dublin. Yeah. And it was, like, the charges for rent were down much, you know, on 11, 12 that time. Unfortunately, there was also the recession. And we put two good shops together, one in Dundrum, not in the major expensive shopping centre, in the smaller shopping centre, the old one.
Yeah.
And in Talla. And it just didn't click, as simple as that. We gave them a couple of years, two and a half years, and we were forced to close them. And we had to make that decision. But, you know, it was tough times in everybody. Maybe we chose the wrong time to open to that market.
But you know, I think also, Dennis, it was probably there for you that you needed to go and try it anyway. You know, if you didn't do it, you'd always be going, we should have tried it, we should have done it. But it's good to go and expand out. And then, you know, after that, I suppose, really, yes, they didn't work. But you were then able to kind of bring your business back in just and solely concentrate on Cork and go, right, Cork is for us and that's where we're staying.
Yes, yeah, and that's what we've decided. I mean, you know, if, as you quite correctly said, for something we wanted to try, we probably chose the wrong time to do it. But we tried it. It wasn't successful. We certainly lost some money doing it, and at a very bad time in our economy. But sure, you know, if you don't dip your toe in the water, you know, and I wouldn't have any regrets about doing it. And I'd say to anybody, you know, if you have an idea, you have to go out and try it. You have to be prepared to take the risk, because there is in any business, and you know, hopefully it pays off for you. Sometimes it won't.
Yeah,
you just have to come back and work away again.
So you came back and said, right, okay. So did you have any of the other stores open at this stage?
I did. I still had my shops here in Cork, and our processing plant was going well into the supermarkets, and we had our shop here, and we had a shop in Ballincollig, and we started expanding out. Then, you know, we had Kinsale, Douglas Court, we took in Dasco later on. So, like, we had our business. We had a business behind us. So, you know, going to Dublin, something we tried. That's it. We still had our business here in Cork.
Yeah, which is great. And, I mean, the Douglas Court one, God, there's queues. The queues out of that every day, Dennis. I suppose it's a small area, but it's very busy all the time, which is great.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people now, you know, they are very focused on shopping local, supply, supporting local, and right next door to you, that lovely vegetable shop as well that supports a lot of local producers. So I think it's great. You can just come in. You can come in and get your fish and your veg and your bread across the way without even going into Dunn stores, which is fantastic.
You know, it's a little foodie corner.
Yeah.
And you know, all the staff there in all the little units around us are so helpful, friendly. Our own staff in Douglas are excellent. They really have to work hard because it's such a small unit. They're so confined and they're trying to pack so much into a small area. They work really hard there. And they're great. Mostly ladies work there, and they're great ladies. We good time for them. Douglas Court is a success there. But they do have to work harder because of the size of the unit, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've actually been to all of your stores, because there would be a time I might ring Douglas looking for something and they don't have it. And they'd tell me to call back in 5 minutes and they'd have rang around the other stores. And so I might be going out to Ballincollig to get what I want. But I love that, because I think it just shows, like, yes, they're in one store, but you've a much bigger team behind you, that they all work really closely together to help the customer. So, you know, that's a really nice feeling when you can actually work with, or you can, as a customer, to go in and they'll be able to help you out, even if they don't have it in their own store, which is great.
It's important, sure. I mean, any business is only about its staff. You know, it's staff and how they treat the customer. You know, store is only a building. It's the staff that make it. And, you know, you could learn from the concealed food circle. You know, if the restaurant is full, they'll phone the next restaurant to get you a table. And it's the same principle.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good customer calling into you, you must do your level. Sometimes we wouldn't have the fish because it wouldn't be there because of weather. You know, this winter was particularly difficult because there was extreme gales and our supply of local fish was limited, very limited.
Yeah.
And so the range in the shops, you know, somebody might come in looking for John Dory or Black Soul or whatever, and we didn't have it.
Yeah.
The reason we didn't have it is because we only sell fresh on our counters. And that's it. We didn't have it because of the weather. The boats weren't out. They didn't catch that fish. And that's the policy that we have. But if they thought that there was some bit of fish in Carrigaline or in somewhere else, they'd try and source it for you.
They are great like that. And I mean,
I think our customers deserve that service as well, you know.
I know, and it is great. And I think the great thing as well is that a lot of your staff, they've been with you a long time. You know, you always see the familiar faces, which is nice as well, because it builds up that, you know, that relationship between the customer and the staff. But you also have a really great selection of frozen foods as well, which are fantastic, because they're especially like the likes of the prawns. I've tried the prawns, the mussels, the scallops, you know, the ones that you do in the shell, which are gorgeous as well, are the seafood shells that you do. But I think that's fantastic. And I think people are starting to look at that as well, to be buying. They are bought fresh, as you say, and then just brought to your processing plant and, you know, put into the actual containers and sold as frozen. So that's great.
Yeah. I mean, some of the prawns, obviously the more unusual ones, are imported, of course. But like any of the Irish ones, we process those ourselves and freeze them down, and they're available. And you know, if the frozen product is frozen on the day of catch or the day of landing, it's equally as good and just more. There's a convenience there as well. You know, people bringing, especially shellfish home, freezing it can be quite risky. I wouldn't recommend it, whereas we have glass freezers here, and it's all traceable as well. That's very important, you know, that there's full traceability on the thing, just in case there is any issues with quality, which, you know, I think, touch wood, we've never had. But nowadays, you have to have all these procedures and conditions around the sale, especially of shellfish.
Yeah, absolutely, of course. And I suppose for you as well, I mean, I know that, you know, if we look at you even just going back to your own time as a boat builder, as a fisherman, you're very passionate and very committed to supporting Irish fishermen where you can. So, like, talk to us a little bit about how you manage this in your business and where your fish supply comes from and how you kind of decide on the fish that you're using.
Well, when I started out first, the first fish auction I attended in 88 was on the pier out in the open at 8 o'clock at night down in Union Hall. Mm-hmm. And that was my first fish auction. And then I went to Castletown Bear and my old Yellow High van, and they had a fish auction there at night. and you'd pick up your bit of fish and buy it in the auction. Now, the auction hall in Union Hall moved into Skibbereen, and it used to start every morning at 6:30. So you had a fine selection of locally caught Irish fish laid out on the floor, and you'd start bidding away on your fish at 6:30 in the morning and try and get it back as soon as you can and have it processed and filleted. And that's how I started. It was tough going, hard work. Now, unfortunately, most of all the auctions are closed. So we would source a great bulk of our fish from Castletown Bay or Fishermen's Co-op.
Yeah.
We would buy from other sources in Union Hall, Kinsale, Boats Landing, Crosshaven, when we would have one or two boats landing in Crosshaven. Some of the bigger boats would go at mackerel at certain times of the year, the Buddy M and that. But when they'd be there, we'd land some of the time on behalf of Castletown. They'd be members of the co-op in Castletown.
Yeah.
But we would land the fish for them, and we would weigh the fish accurately and send the returns back, and everybody's happy. And that's the best fish that you can get, really, because, you know, you're buying it within 10 or 15 miles of your processing plant. You're buying it in the morning, getting it home, processing it, and getting it out to your shops and to your customers.
That's tough going, because you fresh fish every day on your counters, right? So your guys must be like, you obviously have drivers. Do they collect the fish from the different places and stuff like that in order to get it into your processing plant very early morning, no doubt, to be able to get it ready and send out to your shops to open at 9 in the morning?
Sometimes the fish comes through overnight. I mean, like, depending on weather now, you know, a lot of it is dependent on weather and the size of the boat. Some of the boats would land through the middle of the night. We'd have a truck there to collect it, to be brought in the morning, weighed and processed, and then gone on out to our shops or to our customers. And obviously, like the co-op in Castletown there, they have a fleet of trucks, so they will deliver. So, you know, this morning we would be buying a certain amount of fish or what's available.
Yeah.
Obviously, the boats this week, after all the gales that were there, they're running, going out, a lot of them. So there isn't a great availability this morning of fresh Irish fish. But having said that, then, you know, while the organic salmon is all Irish that we buy that from Clare Island and from Donegal. We buy the farm salmon out of Scotland and Norway.
Yeah.
Some of the sea bass, the farm sea bass, and that comes from Turkey. So now it's a global game, you know, it's a global industry now. And then there's Irish fish being sent out. So the different species of fish are Irish haddock and hake and monk is traveling out to Europe, and the farmed fish is coming into Ireland. And,
yeah,
you know, it's changing, of course.
I suppose also, Dennis, COVID, which, you know, God, we're all dying to be able to get back to normal, but it's had a huge effect on so many industries, and one being seafood, especially the early days when you're trying to figure everything out, as you say. But how did you, as a business, how did you work through it? I mean, did you need to change your whole business structure and how you were managing the business?
Well, obviously, we were, because we're a food supplier, we were lucky enough to be able to stay open. So straight away, we invested heavily in protecting our staff, mm-hmm, by the screening and by investing in technology to check the staff as they came into the processing plants. And we invested very heavily in protecting the staff and the customers as best as we could. That was the first thing we identified. We said, we're lucky to be open, so now we have to make this as safe as possible. One of the supermarkets, within a couple of days, they closed down all their fish counters. One of our big customers closed down their fish counters. So that was a bit of a shock to us. We managed through it, and like our sales on the other side grew, and we didn't have to lay anybody off. We still have the same amount of people. Actually, we have more people at the moment employed than we had this time last year.
Amazing, yeah. I mean, look, I suppose that's it, Dennis. He had to, there was changes made for you, just like there were some changes that he had no control over, just like that, with the supermarkets closing down there. Closing down their fish counters as well, but I think it's great to see that you've come out the other end, and as you said, you have increased your staff as well, so you've managed to look at the way the business was and make the changes necessary like everybody else has.
Yeah, you know, and I mean a certain amount of home deliveries, click and collect in the shops, some of the supermarkets were requiring more packaged fish now, you know, the fish in the trays. And that's a growing thing because of the convenience. But then people see it as being safe as well because the food is packaged and sealed.
Yeah.
And that has grown and grown quite substantially. So, you know, COVID has been very hard on everybody. There's no doubt that. And in every business, even the businesses that manage to stay open, there's huge extra costs there. But yeah. The most important thing is to keep everybody safe. That is the most important thing, that our staff, of course, have to be protected, and the customer.
Absolutely. And I suppose, Dennis, I mean, on top of COVID, you've also had Brexit. And I know that, you know, the especially around the fisheries and how that was going to work, there was a lot of uncertainty last year. Now, they've had the rollout of the reduction plan for non-UK fisheries in the UK waters. So how is this going to affect you now and in the future?
It's taken a huge effect, of course, on the whole industry, especially the people who would be dependent on the mackerel and the prawn fishery, the mackerel herring prawn fishery, and the processors that would be involved in that. Their supplies as they had developed, and the fishermen having invested in these boats to catch this fish, now find that that they have less fish, allowed to catch less fish in the same waters.
Yeah.
It's a shocking thing that, you know, Ireland, in Irish waters right now, on simple terms, that 90% of the fish caught off of our shores is by foreign vessels. And only 10%, and this is only rough figures, is caught by our own local fleet. Our own local fleet would be well capable of catching more fish if they were allowed, but they don't have these quotas that were decided 30, 40, 50 years ago. And it's something that the Irish people need to wake up to, especially our governments, and that there's an awful lot of money leaving Irish shores every year, hundreds of millions, that should be coming ashore in Ireland, being processed in Ireland, adding value to it in Ireland, and creating more jobs.
Do you think that will ever like change, Dennis? Do you think there's, you know, I suppose, with Brexit being brought into effect as well, and the impact that's going to have on Irish fishermen, but do you think there's going to be any changes? As you said, this is going back 40, 50 years when these were all set up. You know, what's it going to look like in the future for the Irish fishing business?
If it keeps going as it is, the Irish fishing industry, as in supplying Irish whitefish and whatever, will deteriorate. It will shrink. There's no doubt in that. The state, the government, are going to have to wake up to the idea that this country is losing hundreds upon hundreds of millions every year to farmers. Now, you know, it's not the fault of the men and women that are out there catching the fish from whatever country. They're not breaking any law. It's the decisions that were made in Brussels. And, you know, when a bad decision is made, you can always reverse that. And the quota regulations, not to get too technical about it, will be coming up in Brussels over the next number of years.
Okay.
If there's going to be a sustainable Irish fishing industry, these quotas are going to have to be renegotiate it and give the Irish fishing industry a fair amount and be allowed to catch a fair amount in our own waters.
Yeah.
And that's a very honest thing to ask. Like, you know, it is our territorial waters. Okay, we are part of the EU and we do value the countries where we export fish to. But having said that, it's nonsensical what the Irish fishing fleet are allowed to catch at the present
time.
There's no sense to it at all.
Yeah.
And that will have to change if the fishing industry is to survive to any scale.
Yeah, which is a scary thought. Well, look, you know, hopefully time will tell over the next few years when all those changes are going to be reviewed and looked at, all those quotas. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on that one, Dennis, for sure. And I suppose going on to better things, you had your son, Donna. He joined the business in 2014. He completed, his master's there in Smurfit Business School. But and also he worked in a lot of different food companies across Ireland and the UK before coming on board. Was it hard to get him on board, Dennis, or was that always going to be the plan?
I couldn't keep him out. he had just a passion for it as well. He kind of grew up going out to auctions with me and down here in the fish plant, and he always wanted to come in. At one stage I said, you know, you'd want to think about getting into an industry that's tough, hard business, but he has a passion for it as well, and he's bringing it on now to with his education. You know, I was a boat builder, come fishmonger, small businessman.
Yeah.
He has a better education, and he's bringing it, you know, he's bringing in more modern sales techniques, more modern processing techniques. He's buying and selling fish around the world.
Yeah.
And opening the company up that I didn't have the skills or the education to do. So Donna has brought that to the company, and long may it last. And
it's great because he's got your wealth of experience, and then his knowledge from working in other organizations as well, and his knowledge of the international export market, which is fantastic. So I think combining the both of them together, you're a good pair, obviously working out quite well. Is there any arguments ever between you?
There's always differences of opinion, but it's always work, you know, and we leave it inside the door of the office, and that's it. Whatever we disagree in, we sort out, and we have a great management team here, and we have a good workforce, as you have alluded already.
Yeah.
We have very good people working for us here. Like, I had to take in people and the quality and in the packaging because they had skills that I didn't have when I was developing the company. And now Donna and the management and the quality crew here are bringing it on to the next step.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And that's an amazing career, Dennis. I mean, so, you know, what's next for Good Fish? Is it going to be concentrating on the export market?
Well, you know, we have a very solid business here in the Republic of Ireland. Have a nice bit of business exporting. I would see Donna probably expanding into that because there is a big market out there in Europe, and there is a big demand for value-added and convenience foods growing on mainland Europe as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ireland has a good image, clean seas and good food. And I think that Donna and the team here will bring it to the next level outside of Ireland over the coming years. I'm going to go out to grass and play around with my little boat at home. I won't come after that. But I'll always be there to support them, of course, as long as I can anyway.
Yeah, because you're still involved, though, Dennis, fully at the moment. I know Donna has kind of stepped up within the business. I think, you know, as I was saying to you earlier about my dad, it's never going to retire. You're from that generation that there's no retirement, really.
Well, you know, I think sometimes I'm good at making a nuisance of myself, but as long as I'm able, I don't put in the same amount of time, of course.
Of course, yeah.
I'm 68, going on 69 years of age now. But I help them with a bit of buying and a bit of whitefish buying, and when there's things changing in the factory, they ask my advice, and sometimes they agree with it, and more times they say that's a silly idea and they don't bother with it. And we work away that way, and they'll have a job to keep me out of here, but I'm glad. I'm glad not to be stuck here all the time either now, you know.
I know, absolutely. Well, you know, enjoy that bit of balance, Dennis, you know, you deserve it. Dennis,
thank you
so much for joining me today and telling us your wonderful story. Now, anyone can go to visit any of your retail stores in Cork. As we said, there's five of them. You've got Kinsale, Ballincollig, the Dasco Centre in the back Douglas Road. You have Douglas Court and, of course, Carrigline as well. And across a couple of different supermarkets, your produce can be found. Thank you, Red FM, for the production of this podcast. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And as always, don't forget to like and share. Good Fish Company is on all social media platforms, so you can follow them there, and they have different updates, and they also put up recipes. You can go onto their website, www.goodfish.ie, or also, you can, as I said, you can go onto their Instagram or Facebook platform. Thank you again, and we will be back in a few weeks with another food supplier or producer to talk us through their story.
You've been listening to a Red FM podcast. For more extra content, go to redextra.ie.